All right, we'll say good morning. A beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Chof 20. We are picking up on your Testament days 19b. A lot to do today. We're picking up pretty much the middle of your Testament days. And we're picking up with the word Amai. It's pretty much like right in the middle of the page. I don't know if I should count from the bottom or the top, but it's pretty much right punkt in the middle. Amai lema in chachma vein tvuna vein eitzel neged Hashem. Our shir this morning is dedicated by our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Teves, Shirley Elbaum, together with Avron, Sean, Judah Elbaum, and their families, in memory of their beloved husband and father, Jerry Elbaum, and in commemoration of his 10th year tzeit. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Hashem will have an aliyah and the family in nechama. The week of learning has also been sponsored by the children of Pam Weissman in honor of her birthday and dedicated in recognition of her commitment to Derech Eretz and to Talmud Torah. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Pam will have a wonderful birthday, a year filled with hatzlacha, self-actualization, and arichos yamim v'sharim ad mea v'esim shanim tovos. And I will say with that, let us begin. So remember again, the Gemara introduced the dramatic statement of Rav. Now Rav gave the example of Hamotzi Kalai Bebigdo, a person is going ahead and walking and finds shatnez in his clothing. So Rav said the halach is you have to take off the clothing even in the shuk. So even though, again, it's going to cause me incredible personal embarrassment by having to remove my clothing, in the shuk, nevertheless, quotes the pasuk, in chachma vein tvuna vein eitzel neged Hashem. There is no wisdom, there is no understanding, there is no counsel when it comes to God. I will say, which means that ultimately when there's a conflict between my needs and God's needs, always win. So the Gemara is questioning this concept. And then one of the last case that we ended off with last time is the Gemara said that Allah Alamaisa, you are permitted to go ahead and literally jump over coffins, jump over caskets, in order to go ahead and greet a monarch, a Jewish monarch, a non-Jewish monarch. So the Gemara says, Amai, why are you allowed to do this? Lema in chokmei vein tvuna vein eitzel negen Hashem. Both say, a person is actively making themselves tamei. So it's very nice to be able to see a king, I understand. But Lamais, at the end of the day, you're doing something that is technically wrong. So why are you allowed to do this? To which the Gemara says, Kid Rabbah. Both say, that's actually quite interesting. In accordance with Rabbah, what does Rabbah say? Da'amar Rabbah, Devar Torah, O'el kol sheyish bo chalal tefach, chotzeitz bifnei atumah. We'll say, interesting halacha. If you have a mace, right, you have a corpse, and that corpse is inside of a box, call it a casket. If there is a tefach of space, which is not a lot of space, 3 inches or so, right, the tefach of space in between the mace and the top of the box, that creates an enclosure around the mace, which prevents the tumah from ascending. Right, normally the halacha is tuma is ola bakas, ritual impurity ascends straight up. If you have a space that keeps the tuma within, so therefore the Gemara posits that technically speaking, v'rov aronos yesh ben chalal tefach, the halacha is most caskets have a tefach of space in between the mace and the lid of the casket. Because of that, they contain the tuma inside. Therefore, on a technical level, aside this issue of just, you know, skipping on caskets, right? But aside from that issue, halacha l'maisa, the tumah issue is really a non-issue. But however, the gazru al sheyesh ba mishum she'ein bahen. But in general, the rabbi said, don't skip over caskets, because l'maisa, again, there are some caskets that don't have that requisite height, right? And therefore, again, Chazal said, you know what? Better not to jump over any caskets. However, umishum kavod melachim l'gazru b'rabbanon. But out of deference to the monarchy, ultimately, again, Chazal allowed you to rely on the fact that virtually all caskets have this requisite space, and therefore, halacha l'maisa, it's not a problem to skip over them for the purpose of going to see the monarch. Good. Tashma, we'll say, here we go. Kadol kavod abrios shedoches lo sas hishe b'torah. So the Gemara makes a general statement over here. Kavod abrios. Kavod abrios means respect for human beings is so important that it goes ahead and it sets aside prohibitions. So we'll say, this statement is quite dramatic, because this statement makes it sound like what? Whenever there's a conflict between human dignity and biblical law, what's the halacha? What's the halacha? Human dignity wins out. So the Gemara says, well, 1 second, that's not what we said before. Va'amai. Le'mein chachma vein tvuna vein eitzel neged Hashem. But didn't we learn before the pasuk that says that when there's a clash between human dignity and divine dignity, so divine dignity always wins. So I'll say, this is incredible. Tirgama Rav Bar Shiva Kamed Rav Kahana. Belab delo sasser. You're right. When does human dignity set aside biblical dignity, so to speak, when it comes to the lav of lo sasser? They both say, what's the lav of lo sasser? The pasuk says, lo sasser min ha-gedavra she-yagidu l'cha yaminu smol. The Torah tells us that you shall not deviate from what they tell you, right or left, which is the pasuk that teaches us about rabbinic legislative power. That when the rabbis go ahead and make a law, or they give a gzera, they make a decree, you have to listen. We have to listen, and I cannot go ahead and veer from it right or left. Which I will say actually happens to be a fascinating discussion, because what this means is the rabbis derive their power from the Torah. Which means that if you think about it on a fascinating level, every single derabbanon, every single rabbinic law has elements of what? Of Daraisis, which is, again, there's much written about this. It's really quite fascinating. This concept that every rabbinic law derives from a biblical mandate. So therefore, again, the Gemara says over here, when we say that Gadol Kavod Abrios Shedochus Lo Saseis Shevetorah, that Kavod Abrios, human dignity, is so important that it even sets aside a biblical prohibition. Which biblical prohibition are we talking about? The biblical prohibition that vests the rabbis with the authority to legislate law. Which is another way of saying that when there is a conflict between human dignity and what? And what? And rabbinic law and dirabbanons, human dignity trumps dirabbanons. So the Gemara says, but again, does not trump what? Does not trump da'oraisos. Does not trump biblical law. So achichu alei. So this is very interesting. So ultimately, again, when Rav Shiva gave this explanation, they laughed at him. Lav delo sasser da'oraisihi. Right? What are you talking about? You're interpreting this to mean that when there's a conflict between kavod abrios and ultimately, again, a din derabanan, that kavod abrios trumps the din derabanan, but lo sasser da'oraisa. So Rav Kana said, Gavra Rabba Amar Milsa Lo Sachiku Alei. When a great man says something, don't laugh at him. Kol Mili D'Rabbanon Asmichinu Alav De Lo Sasser U'Mishim Kavodo Shor Rabbanon. So I'll say again here, Rav Kana just explains it, that what Rav Shavar meant to say is as follows, that ultimately the rabbi's ability to legislate law comes from a biblical directive. Specifically, comes from the Lav of Lo Sasser Min Adavar She'Yigidu L'Cha Yaminu Smol. But ultimately, again, but when there is a conflict between Kavod Abrios and rabbinic law, Talocha is that Kavod Abrios trumps rabbinic law, even though it will not trump biblical law. Tashma, we'll say another kasha. Tashma, Visalanta, we'll say it's very interesting. Now, Visalanta, so we're going to see a very unique reading of this pasuk. So the way the pasuk reads is as follows. Dosire sharachicha oseoni dachim, you shall not see. You shall not see. We'll see what it means in just a moment. You shall not see the ox of your brother or the sheep of your brother lost or straying in the path. And you shall hide yourself from them. Return it to your brother. Which I will say is another way of saying, just to translate this normally, is if you see your brother's lost object, don't pretend like you don't see it, but rather, again, take it and return it to your brother. But I will say the phraseology of the pasuk is strange, because v'hisalamta mehem literally means what? Literally means what? You shall hide yourself from it. Right? You shall hide yourself, which sounds like the Torah. I understand from the context that the Torah is telling me, don't hide yourself from it. But a literal translation almost sounds like the Torah is telling me, hide yourself from your brother's lost object. Which I will say yields to an incredible drasha. There are times where I pretend like I don't see the lost object. Which also, that's what I'm saying. There are times where I don't have a mitzvah of hashava saveda. I don't have an obligation to return lost objects. What are those times? Here we go. If I'm a kohen, and what? My friend's lost object is in the cemetery. So the Torah says, "Visalamta mehem, do not go in to retrieve the lost object." Oh, hayazaki menolifi kvodo. Or my friend lost an object, right? But I'm a zaki and I'm an older person. It's not the bakavadik for me to go ahead and start retrieving that lost object. So that has to do with the nature of the object that was lost. Listen to this. The halacha is that when you, this is not our topic for now, but when you fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, you have the right to ask for compensation for lost wages. So if I go ahead and I see your lost object, I'm happy to do the mitzvah, but if I do the mitzvah, I'm going to miss out on work and miss out on lost wages. So when I return the object to you, the owner of the object, have an obligation to compensate me from lost wages. I will say, what happens if halacha lemaisa, the value of my lost wages far exceeds the value of the object? So the halacha is, I have a deal. I have a $5 million deal that's about to close. I see you lost the sock. Now, it's a very special sock to you. I understand your grandmother wove it. You know, it's beautiful. I recognize you because you always talk to me about it. So I'm going to go ahead and I want to get it for you. But let me say, if I get you the sock, I lose the deal. So I'll say, under those circumstances, again, I'm simplifying more complex discussions that we'll have later on. So the halacha is, you're not obligated to return the lost object under those circumstances. So we'll say, so the point over here that the Gemara is making is that the word v'hisalamta, which we are translating as now, hide from it. There are times where you don't have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda. Why? Either because, again, it's not worth your while financially, or it's going to cost you financially. It's a kohen, and it's in a beis hakvara, sucking in a kvodo. So the Gemara says, "Amai leimin chachma vein tvuna vein eitzel neged Hashem." I don't understand. Why do we say that? What we just said before, that's what? When there's a clash between what? My dignity or my needs, and divine dignity, divine needs. What wins? What wins? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wins. So who cares if I'm going to lose the deal? Who cares if I'm a Kohen? And ultimately, again, it's in the Beis HaKvaros. At the end of the day, I should be obligated to fulfill the halacha. To which the Gemara says, no, this is different. Shiny Hasam Dechsevi Salamta Mehem. Because also, we just said before, this is different. Why? Because the Pasuk itself, the Torah itself creates this possibility. The Torah itself creates this subset of circumstances where the halacha is, hide yourself from it. The halacha is telling you, we don't want you to go in and get this object. So why don't we use this as a paradigm and learn out from here that when there is a conflict, sometimes between my needs and divine needs, sometimes my needs do win, to which the Gemara says, Isura mi mamona lo yalfinan. Ultimately, you know, both say this is a case of mamon, right? This is a case of money. We can't learn out cases of iser from cases of money. So, for example, Rabosai, you can understand why the case of shatnez would be different than this case. Because in the case of shatnez, what's happening over here? I'm wearing a davar ha'asr, right? A davar ha'isr. I'm wearing something prohibited. So in that case, who's to say that I could transgress just because my dignity is at stake? In that circumstance, when there's a clash between my dignity and divine dignity wins. But it could be that in cases of mamon, in monetary cases, maybe there are situations where ultimately my dignity wins out, as you see from the pasuk. So Mark gives another example. Tashma. V'lacho. So, we'll say again, this is talking about a nazir. So the Torah says, La'aviv uli'imo la'achiv u'la'acho, so lo yitamu lahem, b'mosam kinezir l'kav arosho. Right, person becomes a nazir, so what's the halacha? Person becomes a nazir, they cannot become tamei, much like a kohen. They cannot become tamei, actually like a kohen gadol. They can't become tamei even for their close relatives. So the pasuk says, V'la'acho so, ma tamu lomar. People say, why does it have to say for his sister? In other words, why does the sister have to be singled out? To which the Gemara says, V'la'acho so, ma tamu lomar. Hare shahaya holich lishchot es pischo. So to give you the following circumstance, let's say the Nazir was going to shecht this carbon Pesach or going to give his son a bris milah. So we'll say, says Machlokas Rashi Tosfos over here, is why exactly bris milah is being brought up. Is bris milah being brought up in the context of carbon Pesach? Is bris milah just being brought up on its own? It's not material for our discussion this morning, just ayin sham. V'shama shameis lameis, and the Nazir heard that one of his relatives died, yachol yachsor v'yitma, you might have thought that the Nazir should go back and attend the Levaya and become Tamei. And obviously, if he becomes Tamei, he can't do his Karban Pesach, or we'll call Bris Milah. So the Gemara says, Amrit lo yitama. But say, therefore, the Pasuk says, a Nazir does not become Tamei. That's the halacha. A Nazir doesn't become Tamei, even for closest relatives. Aye, yachol kashem shirim matami lahem, kach inu matami lameis mitzvah. So you might have thought the same way that a Nazir cannot become Tamei for his own relatives, he also cannot become Tamei for a meis mitzvah. Remember again, what's a meis mitzvah? It's a corpse that has no one to bury it, right? An unattended corpse. So you might have thought that the same way that a Nazir cannot become Tamei ultimately again for the kvura, even of his closest relatives, that it can't become Tamei for a meis mitzvah as well. Talmud lomar v'la'achoso. Therefore, we'll say the pasuk singles out the sister. What do we learn from sister? La'achosu de'inu mitamei. It's to someone like his sister, i.e. a relative, who even if the Nazir does not participate in the burial, someone else will take care of the burial. That's when he can't become Tamei. Tap of Chof. Aval matami hu lemeis mitzvah, but a nazir is permitted to go ahead and become tamei for a meis mitzvah. Then I will say, why is a nazir permitted to become tamei for a meis mitzvah? Because what is a meis mitzvah? What is a meis mitzvah? So look at Rashi, tap Rashi, and kafam and aluf. Aval matami hu lemeis mitzvah, v'hu kavod abrios. Because I will say, a meis mitzvah is a corpse that's lying there. There's no one to bury it. It is such a degradation to the person who died to remain unburied. So the nazir is permitted to go ahead and bury the meis mitzvah. So what do you have happening over here? You have a clash between the dignity of the corpse and between the dignity of God. God tells the nazir, if you're a nazir, then what? You can't become tamei. And yet the corpse is unburied. So there's a clash. Dignity of human being, dignity of God. And yet what do we see is happening over here? The dignity of the human being wins out. To which the Gemara says, why? Amai, lema in chachma, ve'in tvuna, ve'in eitzel neged Hashem. Why don't we go back to the pasuk we said before? There's no wisdom, there's no understanding, there's no counsel opposite God. When it comes to God's dignity trumps everything. To which the Gemara says, shani hasam dechsib ala achoso. I will say again, it's different over here by Nazir. Why? Because the Torah itself is giving us the drasha, right? The Torah itself is including an extra word, and it's there for exposition purposes to teach us this halacha. So why don't you go ahead and learn it out? So why don't we use this as a paradigm? Why don't you use Nazir as a paradigm to say that what? When there is a clash between Kavod HaBrios and Kavod HaShem, right? That ultimately, again, Kavod HaBrios wins out. To which the Gemara says, this is different. Why? Shevi al tasa shiny. They both say, this is very interesting. Shevi al tasa shiny is what's happening over here. When the Nazir goes to take care of the Meis Mitzvah, by definition, when he chooses to take care of the Meis Mitzvah, so what is he losing out on? He's losing out on Karban Pesach. They both say, that's not an active violation of the precept of the Torah. Instead, he's doing something that prevents him from acting. Remember again, all of this is a contrast with the Kilayim case. How did all of this start? Rav made a statement. What was Rav's statement? That Allah alamaisa, if you're wearing Kilayim in the shuk, and you're always wearing shatnez, what do you do? What do you do? Take it off. So we'll say, see, even though now we see examples of where Kavod HaBrios will be docha Kavod HaShem, right? We do see that concept. But nevertheless, that's with Shevi Al Tasa. That's when the violation of the Avera will be passive. For example, the Nazir goes to take care of the mitzvah, so he's not going to end up doing Karban Pesach. He's not actively violating anything. He's just going to end up not doing something. That's when you could say Kavod HaBrios is docha something in the Torah. But when we're talking about an active violation, like what? Like wearing shatnez in the shuk, then under those circumstances, halacha l'maisa, kavod abrios will never be docha lo sase. In that case, when there's an active violation, the kavod of God trumps the kavod of the individual. So we'll say, this brings this sugya to an end. I'm just giving you coming attractions. This is going to be our topic of discussion for this coming Monday's Lunch and Learn. You can see Jeremy Lassen if you want to be added to the WhatsApp group. This is going to be our topic because we'll say, I want to tell you something fascinatingly amazing. The Rambam has a different gears of this Gemara. In the Rambam, see, in our Gemara, the way it reads is Hamotzi Kilayim Bebigdo, which is you're finding shatnez in your clothing. In the Rambam's Girsa, he actually has it is as you know that there's shatnez in someone else's clothing. And the Rambam says, in that moment, you're obligated to go ahead and what? Tell the person, take off your clothing right now. So, Rose, which is actually incredibly amazing because, again, it gets into the fascinating discussion of if you know someone else is transgressing. Somebody was just talking to me about this yesterday after the shir, right? That Michael, right? So if you know that someone else is transgressing, what are you obligated to say? But more importantly, what? When are you obligated to say it? Right? I see someone walking on Shabbos, and I know the Erev is down. Right? They don't know the Erev is down. Right? So do I say, by the way, you know, I love you. I don't want you to go to Gehenna. Right? Stop. Right? Just stop. Right? So let's say, so obviously, again, you put a person sometimes in an impossible situation. So again, that's all this particular sugya Mirat Hashem this coming Monday afternoon. All right, let's go back. I'm going to say this is a beautiful, beautiful Gemara. Amrli Rapapa Labai. Rapapa said Labai the following. Maishna, we'll say, listen to this. Maishna Rishonim this Rachesh Lehunisa. Umaishna Ananda Lomis Rachesh Lehunisa. We'll say, such a profound Gemara. So Rapapa said Labai, why is it that the earlier generations merited miraculous intervention? They saw miracles, and we don't have miracles. What's the pshat? If you want to say it's because they learned more than us, Rabbi says this is incredible. It's not really true. We learn more than them. After all, Bishani Rabbi Yehuda Kulei Tanoi Ben Zikin Hava. Right? In the days of Rabbi Yehuda, the earlier generation, everyone was proficient. All the yeshivas were learning Nezikin. Va'anan Kamasninan Shisa Sidari. And today in our yeshivas, we learn all Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. So in other words, in respect to learning, one can actually make the argument, our Papa said, that we are actually on a higher level. We're learning more. Furthermore, V'chi havamati Rabbi Yehuda bo'oktsin b'isha shakovesh es yarek b'kdeira. So I'll say, furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda would get to certain topics in oktsin, and they would get to topics like ha'isha shakovesh es yarek b'kdeira. A woman who's pickling a vegetable. So again, just to give you the outline of these topics, in general, the concept is, if you have a vegetable, so we'll say, let's use like a carrot, for example. If you have a carrot, and the carrot has like the leafy part on the top, right? So that leafy part on the top is what's called a yad, the same way that a utensil has a handle, and that handle is considered to be part of the utensil. If a vegetable has like a growth on top of it, that's also called the yad. So we'll say that has ramifications for tumah purposes. If the yad, if let's say the part on top of the carrot comes in contact with tumah, that tumah could be conveyed to the rest of the carrot. So there's a whole discussion about what happens when you pickle the vegetable, and therefore the yad itself is no longer as firmly embedded. The top is no longer firmly embedded. Is it still part of the vegetable? Not part of the vegetable. So when they would have these discussions in Rabbi Yehuda's time, he would say, "Habios teravu Shmuel kachazina." Oh, now we're getting into topics of Rav and Shmuel. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say that we're getting into complicated topics now of Toman Tara. Va'anan kamasninen ba'oktzin tleisa mesifta. We have 13 yeshivas that learn oktzin. So the point that Rav Papa was trying to make is, he was trying to figure out, why is it that earlier generations, they received miraculous intervention, we don't. So if you want to say it's because they learned more, it's not true. We learn more. We learn more than them. We cover more topics than them. We have a greater yeshiva system than them. And yet, let's listen to this. V'ilu, Rav Yehuda ki avashalav chad masanei asimitra. Yet Rav Yehuda, when it was the time of a drought, as soon as he would take off one shoe as a time of discomfort, it would begin to rain. All Rav Yehuda needed to do was take off a shoe. Taking off a shoe as a sign of avelus, a sign of mourning, a sign of difficulty, that there was a drought and it would rain. Va'anon and us kametzarinon nafshin umitzavach katzavchinon v'les demashkach ban. But we afflict ourselves, we cry out, we daven, we do all of these things, and yet what? We cannot get rain. So we'll say, by the way, understand the profundity of this question. The profundity of this question is, so they're trying to figure out, we have so much Torah, so much Ruchnius, so much Avodas Hashem, yet we're clearly missing something. Because at the end of the day, Rabbi Yehuda would take off a shoe and was able to bring rain. We daven and we can't bring rain. So listen to this. Amar Lei, so we'll say, Abaye responded, this is incredible. Kamai hava kamasri nafshayu akidushas Hashem. We'll say, listen to this answer. Earlier generations were most in nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. We'll say, I want to say a word about this. Now, when we think about Kiddush Hashem, so often, what do we think about? We think about death. You know, if Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, said, what people don't realize is, dying a Kiddush Hashem is easy. Why? You only have to do it once. Living a Kiddush Hashem is much more complicated, because that's a daily struggle. And it's an incredible idea what the Gemara is suggesting over here. So Abaye is responding is, you have to understand something. They had Mesiras Nefesh for Kedushas Hashem. They were Moser Nefesh. So let's say, we often think that the litmus test for successful Judaism is the amount of time you're spending on your Yiddishkeit, whether it's the amount of time on your learning or the amount of time on your mitzvos, and that's certainly important. But we all know you could spend a lot of time on something and it could still be empty and hollow, right? We do that with plenty of things in life. There was, says Abaye, they were Moser Nefesh. There was an incredible element of self-sacrifice. They pushed themselves in dramatic ways. They went above and beyond. And look what he says, Anan, lo masrinon nafshin akidushas Hashem. But we don't really push, this is Abaye speaking to Rav Papa, we don't really push ourselves so much. We're not really Moser Nefesh. We don't really sacrifice all that much for the sanctification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. They're both saying, I have to understand who's having this conversation. This is Rav Papa. Right? This is Abaye telling Rav Papa, they were Moser Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're not really Moser Nefesh so much for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which they both say is really an incredible yisod. To ask myself, how much am I Moser Nefesh? Not how much do I put in. But we'll say Mesiras Nefesh means sacrifice. How much do I sacrifice for my Yiddishkeit? See, a lot of times I'm willing to do something as long as it's comfortable and doesn't demand all that much of me. But the moment that it becomes uncomfortable or difficult, that's the moment I'm not really willing to go above and beyond. So ultimately, the Gemara is telling us over here, that's the distinction between a Rav Yehuda and the Rav Papa. Or I'm just using Rav Papa because Rav Papa is the example over here. Right? How much am I willing to push myself and sacrifice for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How much am I willing to do even when the process becomes uncomfortable? How much willing to sacrifice from my time, from my comfort, from whatever it is, in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And I will say, now the Gemara brings up an interesting example of this. Kihad Rav Ada Bar Ava, listen to this story. Rav Ada Bar Ava, Chazye Lahi Kusis Dehavis Levisha Karbalta Beshuka. So Rav Ada Bar Ava one time saw a kusis. Now he was going to see, he did not realize that this was a kusis. And so what does he do? He sees her that she's wearing a karbalta. Now Rabbi says, karbalta, Rashi says, the shame levushcha shikimo pashtun karbaltin. And what happens? Suffered the Bas Yisrael, he thought it was a Jewish girl. Kam kare mine. And he tore the karbalta. Now Rabbi says, now the Gemara is not telling the story in order for us to emulate this behavior in any way, shape, or form. Right? The Gemara, don't do this. I want to go on record. Do not do this. Let's say what it's saying over here is that, so first of all, this karbalta, the Marsha points out, was like a flaming red garment, which was considered to be a fundamental lack of tznius, a fundamental lack of modesty. So if Ada Bar Ava saw what he perceived to be a fundamental lack of modesty, he could not take the transgression that he saw, and so he stepped in and he tore the karbalta. Obviously, we're talking about a situation where it would not compromise ultimately the tznius of the woman. Otherwise, again, it's yet a schara bef seido that obviously would not be. But lemaisa, this is what he did. Or also, I just want to point out something amazing. Even though this behavior is not to be emulated, it does show something absolutely incredible, which is the inability to stomach wrongdoing. Right? I will say, you see, this is very countercultural, because in today's society, what we are taught is everything is acceptable. Everything is acceptable. You have no right to judge anyone else, right? If you feel it, it's okay. If you believe it, it's okay. Whatever you decide, you could create new things, panim chadashos ba'olakan, you can make up new identities, new this, whatever it is. But if you want it, then it has to be okay. No one has any right. And I will say, that's wrong. That's wrong, because what happens is, when there is no right and wrong, and there are no clearly defined categories, that leads to a fundamental erosion of society and a fundamental erosion of morality. So I'm just pointing out, the behavior itself is wrong, and we're going to see he's penalized for it. The behavior is wrong, but Lamaisa, the ability to like have in your mind, don't you find this? I find this all the time. You know, the lines between good, or I should say, appropriate, not appropriate, kosher, treif, tametar, they're so blurred, right? There's so much moral equivalency with everything that it's almost like you're not allowed to say this is right or this is wrong, this is pure, this is impure. But I will say, you have to have that. We have to hold the line. We might not be able to impact greater society, but we can impact every greater society. We can absolutely impact our lives and impact our mishpachos, and to make sure there are clearly drawn lines between what is right and what is wrong, what is acceptable. Not everything is okay just because people do it, and not everything is acceptable just because people, you know, promote a banner for it. There are things that are right and there are things that are wrong. Even if you think something is wrong, you have to treat people with respect. Every person deserves kavod abrios. That's for sure. And that's what we're going to see. That was Rav Ada Bar Ava's mistake. Rav Ada Bar Ava's mistake was, you don't go ahead and go up to people in the street and tear their clothing. Right? You don't go up to people and go ahead and start yelling in their face because you think that they're wrong. There's always a kavod abrios. There's always a dignity for every single human being, no matter how wrong you think they will be. But at least for our own personal hashkafas, to always maintain those lines of right and wrong are so important. So I'll say, what happened? So the kusis he. So I'll say, first of all, he finds out that she's not Jewish. Oh, sorry. Right? So number one, she's not Jewish, she's a kusis. So we'll say what happened. So they brought him to Beis Din. Shaimua ba'arba mea zuze. We'll say it's pretty incredible. They fined him 400 zuz, which I will say was an incredible amount of money. Way beyond, Marsha points out, way beyond the actual value of the Karbalta. Very simply, don't do this. This is not the kind of behavior we have. So listen to this. Amrala Mashmech. So he says to the woman, tell me, what's your name? Amrale Masun. He said to her, my name is Masun. Amrala Masun Masun Arba Zuze Shavya. Masun Masun, you cost me 400 zuz. So Rashi points out, it's a little bit of a play on words. Masun is like the word Masun. Masun means 200. So Masun Masun, right? 200, 200, you cost me 400 zuz. Incredible. Rav says, go weiter. Rav Gidl Hava Ragil. So we'll say, now we speak about a couple of other interesting behaviors. Rav Gidl Hava Ragil, excuse me, Rav Gidl Hava Ragil, the Hava Ka'azil V'yasev Ashari D'Tvila. Rav Gidl used to go ahead and position himself outside of the mikvah. Amrlohu, hachi tevilu v'hachi tevilu. So he would go ahead and he would, this way, if there were any shailus about tevila, he would go ahead and he would tell the women how to be told. I just have to say something about this. Right, don't try this on, that's number one, right? But I will say, but on a serious note, you know, we live in a time where there is really no respect for authority in general. And that's even like, that has even trickled into our communities and in our communal infrastructure. But see, when we read about great people operate on a different plane. And it is so important that we not bring our own metrics of judgment when it comes to the behaviors of great people. Part of Amunas Chachamim and Amunas Chazal mean putting Chazal on a different pedestal. They're human beings and they make mistakes. The Gemara tells us about their mistakes. But just to recognize again to us what sometimes sounds like a little bit strange and is strange for us. That's why I say we don't try these things. But Lamaisik, and we're talking about people who are just on a different level. And sometimes the mistake that people make, especially when it comes to learning Gemara, is they look at these people, look at these great Rabbanim, through the lens of their own shortcomings, through the lens, ultimately, again, of their own limited abilities. And we just have to be so careful, because the moment you do that, Rabbo says, the moment you sap the Kiddusha out of the Gemara, the moment you sap the Kiddusha out of the Torah HaKiddusha, and the moment that the truth is your Talmud Torah becomes an exercise in futility. Your Torah is only meaningful if you have a munas chachamim and an incredible regard for Chazal. So we'll say with that, Rav Gidl used to sit outside the mikvah. So this is obviously not in the mikvah, not in the mikvah. Sharei Tvila means outside of the mikvah. He was there ultimately again to go ahead and give proper, if there were shailus that came up, people would come out of the mikvah to go ahead and ask him shailus. So listen, Amrli Rabbanon, lo kamestafi mar mi yetzahara. Are you not afraid of the yetzahara? They're sitting by the mikvah. Women are going to the mikvah. Again, you're not worried that you're going to have inappropriate thoughts about anything. Amr Luhu, he said to them, damyon ba'apai ki kakoi chiyuri. In my eyes, they look like white geese. So what he's saying over here is, Baruch Hashem, obviously on a different kind of level, Rav Gidl was, that he didn't have this Yetzihara, that it didn't elicit anything inappropriate. Obviously the white geese, meaning a sign of purity. I see people, I see Jews, ultimately, who are going ahead and going to try to achieve purity. He obviously didn't ascribe any level of sexuality to it, which I will say talks to the level that Rav Gidl was on. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan, Havaragel de Havaka'azel v'yasev ashari de tevila. So it's interesting. Rabbi Yochanan would also sit on the outside of the mikvah, right? So Rav Gidl was there to be able to paskin halacha if it was necessary. Rabbi Yochanan wasn't there to paskin halacha. Why is Rabbi Yochanan? It is incredible. See, he says, "Kisalkan benos yitzava asim mitvila mistaklin bi." When the women come out of the mikvah and they're going home, let them look at me. Why? Venehaviluhu zara de shapir. Rabbi Yochanan, we already saw Gemara like this last week. Rabbi Yochanan was known to be exceptionally handsome. Exceptionally handsome. So let them look, let the women look at an exceptionally handsome person when coming home from the mikvah and going home to their husbands. And ultimately, again, maybe in the schus of looking at a handsome Tam Chacham, they'll have children will be beautiful as well. Right? Nehavi lehu zara de shapiri kavasi. Amar le rabbana lo kamestafi mar me'ina bisha. So he said to Rabbi Yochanan, are you not concerned about ayin hara? Or is, okay, you are a very beautiful man, don't get me wrong. Right? But lamaisa, again, are you not worried about the fact that you're pretty much like floor? flaunting your beauty by sitting here at the entranceway or the exit of the mikvah. Amar lehu, ana mizar de Yosef kasina. He said, I don't worry about ayin hara. Why? I am from the offspring of Yosef Atzadik, the Lo Shalta Be'in Abisha. We'll say when it comes to Yosef, like the offspring of Yosef are not subject to Ayin Hara. Dichsev, Ben Porat Yosef, Ben Porat Ale Ayin. Literally, again, a charming or beautiful son is Yosef, Ben Porat Ale Ayin. Va'amre Rabbi Yavo, Al Tikri Ale Ayin Ela Ole Ayin. What's the godless of Yosef? Yosef rises above the eye. That ultimately, again, he is not subject to Ayin Hara. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina Amar Mihacha, V'yidgul Arov B'keref Ha'aretz. He learns that from elsewhere. Literally, again, they will propagate, right, in great numbers, B'keref Ha'aretz. Ma dogim shebiyam mayim mechasan ve'in Ayin Rashol. The Rabbi say, just like fish, because they're covered by the water, they're not subject to Ayin Hara. Af zaro shol Yosef in Ayin Hara sholet esmen. So too, again, the offspring of Yosef, the Ayin Hara is not sholet by them. It doesn't take effect in them. The by same the other possibility is Rabbi say, what? Ayin sholet the eye that did not want to benefit from that which was not it, from that which did not belong to it, ain ayin hara sholet this ba. The ayin hara has no effect. Which is an incredible reference to Yosef and Ishes Potiphar. Even though, again, he could have had the wife of Potiphar if he wanted, he chose not to. So the eye, Yosef's eye, which would not benefit from something that was not his, i.e. another man's wife, no other eye has the ability ultimately to impact him. I will say quite incredible. Says the Mishnah, but now we get to an incredible Mishnah. Nashim va'avadim u'ketana p'tur mikriyashma. Women, servants, and ketanim. Ketanim are minors, are part from Kriyashma. So we'll see that a lot of this ultimately, again, is it seems to be pretty basic, because again, Kriyashma, remember, is a mitzvah asay shazman grama. It's a time-bound commandment. But again, we'll see in the Gemara about all of this. So women have avodim ketanim part from Kriyashma. Na'amadeis, umina tefillin, and from tefillin. Rechayavin betfila, but ultimately again they're chayavin tefila ube mezuzah berkas hamazon. So as much as woman is put from kriyashma and from tefillin, ultimately again she is chayaves. All these are chayiv in tefila, davening mezuzah and benching berkas hamazon. Says the Gemara, kriyashma pshita. That's obviously that woman is put from shema. After all, mitzas asei shazman grabahu. We'll see in Kiddushin, right, the sugya of mitzvahs asei shazman grama nashim peturos is a sugya in Kiddushin. So we'll see it in Mirat Hashem. But we'll say, but the idea is a woman is exempt from all mitzvahs asei shazman grama. She is exempt from all time-bound mitzvahs. So at the end of the day, what's the chiddush in Mishnah, in Kriyashma, to which the Gemara says, Ma'od v'teimo, ho'ol v'ispe malchus shamayim malchus shamayim. We'll say, I would have thought maybe Shema is different. Even though Shema is a time-bound mitzvah, nevertheless, what is Shema? Shema is Kabbalah's Omach Hashem, it's acceptance of the yoke of heaven. So I would have thought that what? Even a woman should be chayeves, and even though it is time-bound, perhaps this should be the exception to that rule. Kamashmolano, that a woman will be exempt from Shema because Shema is a time-bound mitzvah. Umina tefillin. Omen is also exempt from tefillin. I both say now, why is woman exempt from tefillin? So Bepashas Rashi in the Mishnah points out because tefillin is also in mitzvahs asei shazman grama. It's also a time-bound mitzvah. Why is tefillin a time-bound mitzvah? I both say. Ultimately, why? Because halacha lemaisa, there's Shabbos and nighttime. Right, we don't put on tefillin at night, we don't put on tefillin on Shabbos. So that makes it time-bound, therefore a woman will be exempt. To which the Gemara says, what would you have thought? But say we know that in Kriyashma, tefillin is compared to mezuzah. Rashi says, just like woman is chayavis in mezuzah, so we'll say, since the mitzvos of tefillin and mezuzah are juxtaposed, I might have thought that just like a woman is chayaves in mezuzah, she's going to be chayaves in tefillin, kamash malon not. The chayavim betfila, and a woman is chayaves in tefillah, diracham ininu. I will say for one simple reason, because ultimately, again, tefillah is rachami, right? Tefillah, what is prayer? Prayer is divine supplication, right? At the end of the Echadosh Baruch Hu, I need your help. So it makes sense that a woman should be obligated on that as well. Why? What would you have thought otherwise? Mal detema, holuk sivba, erev avokir et saharayim. Since Rabbi said the pasuk of Tehillim, when it makes reference to tefillah, says, erev avokir et saharayim. In the morning, or I should say in the evening, in the morning and in the afternoon. Asicha, I will converse with you. David HaMelech is talking about tefillah. And he says that tefillah applies in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening. So I might have thought, kemitzas asei shazman gramadami. Ultimately, again, I would have thought that it's like a time-bound mitzvah. Kamashon, that it's not. Kamashon, I will say that tefillah. They will say, interestingly enough, when we speak about the woman's obligation in tefillah, the fact that the Gemara understands that tefillah is not time-bound indicates to us that although a woman may have an obligation to daven, lav dafka, that she has an obligation to daven, let's say, shachris, mincha, mairiv, there just may be a more basic obligation of tefillah. So again, not a topic. We'll see this more in the fourth parak, but just understand what we've just proven is that she has an obligation to daven. What she has an obligation to daven, Emirat Hashem, still remains to be seen. Obe mezuzah, a woman, and I'm using woman, but remember again, it's nashim avadim kitanim. A woman will be chayeves in mezuzah. So I take that back. We're talking about nashim now. So mezuzah, pshita. A woman will be chayeves. It's obvious she's chayeves in mezuzah. Mal detema, hov iskish la Talmud Torah. But see, that's very interesting. Mezuzah is compared to Talmud Torah. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says nakish mezuzah Talmud Torah dechsev v'limaretem osam es b'neichem. So listen to this. So the pasuk says, "V'limaratem osam es b'neichem." So the Gemara dashins, "V'limaratem osam es b'neichem, v'lo b'noseichem." Right? You're obligated to teach your sons, and obligated to teach those. I will say, what does that mean? So remember again, that doesn't mean that women don't learn Torah. Of course, women can learn Torah. Women should learn Torah. Right? The idea is, who has an obligation? Ultimately, again, in Talmud Torah. So a woman can and absolutely should learn Torah. Is it obligatory? So the truth is, this is part of a bigger discussion, because I think one could make the very cogent argument that contemporarily it is exceptionally important for women to learn Torah. But Lamais, again, that doesn't necessarily result in an obligation. There's a difference, just a technical difference. Good, absolutely encouraged, absolutely should. Obligatory? Probably not. Because the part says you shall teach your sons. So I will say right after that, right after the obligation of Talmud Torah, comes the mitzvah of mezuzah. So read Rashi. So we'll say, ultimately, again, I might have thought that since mezuzah is linked to Talmud Torah, just like women are technically exempt from Talmud Torah, so too they should be exempt ultimately from mezuzah. Kamash malon, not like that. That was interestingly enough, if you look at the rest of that Rashi says, kamash malon, the nashim chayavos tichsiv l'man yirbu yimeichem. Gavri bo chai, nashi lo bo chai. So what's the interesting when it comes to mezuzah? So the lashon of the pasuk is l'man yirbu, right? You put up the mezuzah in order that you will have longevity. So the Gemara says, is it only men who require longevity and women don't require longevity? So therefore, again, women are, even though so the havamina is, I might have thought that since mezuzah is juxtaposed to Talmud Torah, just like a woman is parted from Talmud Torah, so too she should be patura from mezuzah. Kamashan, that's not the case. Kamashan, that she is chayaves in mezuzah. Ubebir kasamazan. It's actually quite interesting as well. And she's chayaves in benching. Pshita. That's obvious. Mao de tema, what would you have thought? Hoy luksib beseis Hashem lochem be'erev basr lecho. Velechem babokir lisboa. Kimitsa seishas man gramadami. Because what's the Gemara quotes the pasuk over here. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Shemos when actually speaking about the man, right? And speaking about, I'm sorry, Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking about the fact that Klal Yisrael is complaining. Even though what? They have basr in the morning, basr in the evening. So in speaking about eating, Moshe Rabbeinu frames the acts of consumption as ba'erev and babok. You're eating in the morning, you're eating in the evening. Simon thought, therefore, again, that eating birkas hamazon is a mitzvah asei shazman gram. Since Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about the act of eating and framing it in the morning and the evening, kamashon der aloch alamaisa, benching is not considered to be a mitzvah asei shazman gram, and therefore nashim are chayavos. So we'll say this opens up a fascinating discussion. Amar Rava Barava, nashim chayavos bekiddush hayom. Women are obligated in kiddush. Very interesting halacha. We'll say women are obligated in kiddush. This is kiddush on Shabbos, kiddush on the Dvar Torah. Mid the oraisa, women are chayavos in kiddush. So the Gemara says, "Amai, why is that? Mitzvah saseh shazman gramahu. Isn't kiddush a time bound mitzvah? V'chol mitzvah saseh shazman gramahu nashe peturos. And women are exempt from all time bound mitzvos." To which the Gemara says, "Amra baye midrabanan. Enochinami, you're right. Women are chayavos in kiddush, but only midrabanan." What was it? That's not what you said. That's not what you said. Remember again, Rabosi, how did this statement begin? Rav Ata Bar Rava said, Noshim Chayavos Pekid Hashem Dvar Torah. So Dvar Torah means what? Dvar Torah means what? Dvarais, not the Rabbanon. Amar Rava, Rava says like this. I'm sorry, Va'od, Komitzos Asay, Nechayavim Midrabanon. Furthermore, if you're going to say that they're chayavos in Kiddush, midrabanon, and Kiddush is a mitzvah asei shazman grama, then what? You should make them chayavos midrabanon in what? In all mitzvahs asei shazman grama. Rather, Ella Amar Rava, you're right. Amar Kra, Zachar v'Shamar. I will say the pasuk when it comes, or the psukim when it comes to Shabbos, right? The two different versions of the Aseres Hadibros. In one version it says Zachar Yom Shabbos Lekadsho, and the second version it says Shamar Yom Shabbos Lekadsho. So we'll say Zachar v'Shamar. Now remember again, Zachar v'Shamar refer to the two different aspects of Shabbos. Right, Zachar refers to the positive commandments of Shabbos, like Kiddush, like Seudos, like Oneg. Shamar refers to what? To the prohibitions of Shabbos. So the Gemara makes a very interesting limud. Kol sheyeshno b'shmira, yeshno b'schira. Whoever is obligated in shmira is obligated in zichira. So what's another way of saying that what? Whoever is obligated in the prohibitions of Shabbos is what? Obligated in the positive commandments of Shabbos. Therefore, v'hani nashi hoil v'isno b'shmira, isno b'schira. And therefore, again, women, I will say, now obviously, even when we say mitzvah shaz, that a woman is exempt from mitzvah aseh shazman grama, that only applies to what? Only applies to what? To aseh, to positive commandments, right? A woman can say, for example, you know what, I'm not obligated to keep Shabbos because Shabbos is a mitzvah shazman grama. After all, Shabbos only applies on the seventh day. I'm exempt, right? I'm allowed to eat chametz because at the end of the day, the prohibition of chametz is a mitzvah shazman grama. That doesn't apply, right? The concept of the Petur, the exemption for time-bound commandments only applies to positive commandments, not to prohibitions. So both say, the Gemara understands over here, the linkage between Shamar and Zachar tells you, whoever is bound by Shmira, so whoever is bound to keep Shabbos, i.e. is not allowed to violate the precepts of Shabbos, automatically becomes obligated in what? In the positive commandments of Shabbos. Therefore, again, because a woman has an obligation of Shmiras Shabbos, therefore she also has an obligation of Zechiras Shabbos. And therefore, Allah Chalamayisa, the Gemara is saying that a woman has an obligation of Kiddush, Midaraisa. Amar Le Ravina the Rava. So Avinu said to Rava, "Noshim beberkas amazon daraisa dirabanan." Tell me, when it comes to women in benching, is there obligation midaraisa or midrabanan? Now, you'll see to yourself, what is this question depending on? This is actually quite interesting. Take a look at Rashi. Noshim beberkas amazon daraisa dichsev yachalta v'savata v'avir mitzvahs asay sheresman grama. So we'll say, I want to, you could say, you should be obligated biblically. Why? Because when it comes to Shema, what does the Torah say? V'yachalta v'savata, which means what? Which means what? If you eat and you are satiated, then Allah I see you bench. It's not dependent on time, right? Whether you go out and eat in the morning, eat in the evening, so they're chayiv. On the other hand, look at Rashi, Dirabanan. This is actually quite interesting. O Dirabanan, Dichsiv, Al Ha'aretz HaTova Asher Nasan Lach. Both say the Pasuk by benching says, you'll thank Hashem for the food and for the land that He has given you. That land is a specific reference to Eretz Yisrael. Now, we know Rabbah said that ultimately, again, the land of Israel was divided up amongst the male members of the Shvatim, right? Not amongst the women. The exception to that, of course, was who? Was Benos Slavchad. But even Rashi points out, Benos Slavchad didn't get their own portion. What did they get? They got their father's portion, right? So ultimately, maybe I should say that since the Torah Kedosha links benching to land ownership in Eretz Yisrael, and the land was divided up amongst the men, not amongst the women. Therefore, maybe women should only be chayavos midrabanan in benching. To which the Gemara says, "So am I nafkamino? What's the practical difference? Of what does it really matter if benching is doraisa or drabanan? La fuke rabim yedei chobasan." The Bosei say it matters in terms of whether or not a woman could ultimately exempt others in birkas hamazon and benching. After all, I amrit doraisa. Asi doraisa mafik doraisa Eli amrit rabbanon havi shane. I'm sorry. Eli amrit rabbanon. So we'll say. But, so we'll say. If you say that a woman is a doraisa, then what does that mean? A woman could exempt in benching any other doraisa, which is any other woman or any the other man. If on the other hand you hold that our obligation is only dirabanan, then what? Havi davar she'ena mukhuyev davar. So we'll say v'chol she'ena mukhuyev davar eina motzi esarabim yedei chovasan. So we'll say, so this leads to an interesting question, which is if you hold that she's a dirabanan, so at most she could be motzi maybe another dirabanan, but what? Suni cannot be motzi someone who is a chiyav darais. Because we'll say in general, in order to be motzi, in order to help, in order to discharge someone else's obligation, you must what? You must be on the same halachic level of obligation as that person. If I only have the chiyav drabanan, I cannot discharge the obligation of someone's daraisa. So that's the shayla. Who's out, right? What's the level of a woman's obligation? Is she a daraisa? Or ultimately, again, is she dirabanan? Rabbi Yossi, we'll stop over here. Will Emirat Hashem pick up with this question? Emirat Hashem, b'shah tov, and tomorrow's daf. Wow.